Hey guys, thanks for listening to Alt Latino. Whether it's Jennifer Lawrence discussing her social anxiety issues or writer Ta-Nehisi Coates reflecting on violence against African Americans and his struggle with forgiveness, you'll hear candid, in-depth conversations on Fresh Air with Terry Gross. From the big name guests to the up-and-coming musicians, artists, and writers, you can find it all on the Fresh Air podcast. That's at npr.org/podcast and on the NPR One app.
From NPR Music, this is Alt Latino. I'm Felix Contreras.
And I'm Jasmine Garz.
This week, we're going to talk about the Academy Awards, or the Oscars, Hollywood's most prestigious recognition of outstanding achievements in all areas of filmmaking here in the United States. And this year, we're not the only ones who have something to say about the Oscars.
There's been a firestorm of controversy.
The lack of diversity.
Lack of diversity.
And institutional exclusion.
That people of color were excluded.
That's BS.
Degrading.
The wrong direction.
Insulting.
Telling people.
Boycott.
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 Tune out.
The Academy was slammed.
That will send a message.
Disharmony.
Obviously, lots of attention in the mainstream media. And here to help us put all of this into perspective is NPR movie critic Bob Mondello. Bob?
Hey, it's good to be here.
Good to have you back.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
The lack of diversity is a problem of what's not present in Hollywood movies. And what we're going to do today in this show is take a short look at what is there and what has been there in the past with movies, characters, actors, actresses that have been reflective in some way of the Latino experience here in the United States. A tall order.
I was going to say, whoa, that's worth at least 7 or 8 hours.
We're going to solve all the problems right now.
Excellent.
And tell Hollywood how to do it.
Well, is it almost like show me something that is invisible?
A little bit, yes. No, I think in fairness to Hollywood, this goes way back, and it has more to do with the public perceptions of Latin America that Hollywood helped to create back in the beginning
right.
of the last century. What happened was there were stereotypes about Mexicans particularly, but people from Latin America. And those stereotypes were crystallized in a series of silent films that were made that had titles, I actually wrote this down, things like Bronco Billy and the Greaser, Tony the Greaser. And the characters started being called, it became a term that you used instead of other terms for Latin Americans. And the stereotype was that these guys were violent, were emotionally immature, were kind of scary. And the women were voluptuous and excitable and you know, incredibly romantic.
You could be describing the industry now.
Right. I mean, that's the problem. And those characteristics stuck with those characters for many, many years. And it took at one point, the Mexican government decided it wasn't going to allow any American films to be shown in Mexico that had these kinds of stereotypes in them.
Huh.
And it didn't last for very long. Hollywood managed to make a couple of pictures that were not quite so offensive, and then everything was okay again. But it wasn't until almost World War II that you got a lot of characters who were depicted in more affirmative ways. And that was largely because the U.S. government got involved in a good neighbor policy because there was this war brewing in Europe, and they wanted to make sure nobody was trying to break into the United States from other countries where it was very accessible.
And a very famous film, a Walt Disney film, the cartoon, Donald Duck goes to South America, mm-hmm. hangs out with a bunch of beautiful women,
exactly.
eats a lot of fruit.
Let's go back to 1943 with a film that I remember seeing some Saturday afternoon mm-hmm. when they used to show films on Saturday afternoon on television. This is a movie called The Oxbow Incident.
Oh, yes.
Okay. And it is based on a novel, and it's essentially about the mentality of mob violence, vigilante violence. Mm-hmm. These three cowboys are accused of cattle rustling and murder, one of which is a Mexican vaquero or a Mexican cowboy who was portrayed by a very, very young and strikingly handsome Anthony Quinn very early on in his career. And what struck me was that he played the role with a huge amount of dignity and with a lot of character. And we're going to play a clip. And the setup is that they've just found all of these guys. Up to this point, he's only speaking Spanish in the film. And then they find a gun that was allegedly used in the crime, and then this happens.
Here's his gun.
Say, that's Larry Kincaid's gun.
Where did you get this?
Somebody will take this bullet out of my leg, I'll tell you.
So he speaks American.
And 10 other languages, my dear. But I don't tell anything I don't want to in any of them.
Now, where'd you get that gun?
Found it.
Where?
Lying in the road.
You're a liar.
And you're a blind fool.
I asked you where you got it.
No sabe.
That's remarkable. And he's not Greek.
Okay, full disclosure, I don't know a lot about the history of American movies. So I'm a little bit out of my league amongst you two. But growing up, I would hear my grandmother sigh over Anthony Quinn, right? And, you know, in my mind, anyone whose last name is Quinn, Q-U-E-E-N in my mind, is not Latino.
Right.
Right? And then Felix, all of a sudden, we're preparing the show, and he's like, oh, no, it's Anthony Quinn, and he's Mexican.
Yeah, no, and everybody knew him as Zerba the Greek, so people really thought he was a different ethnicity. I think what happens is that actors who have a darker skin color and a certain difference in facial shape and things like that get characterized as sort of other.
So there was a lot of passing into being white, and not only looking white, but sounding like your name was white, like Anthony Quinn. Anthony Quinn, his real name is Antonio Rodolfo Quinn Oaxaca.
What was interesting about that period was that in 1930s and 40s, all of a sudden you were getting a lot of musical pictures. It was flying down to Rio, and there were pictures with Latina stars who were a big deal. Carmen Miranda was one of them from Brazil. A lot of musical things where everybody's doing the various samba rhythms, and you're getting into that, and that was substituting a different set of stereotypes, obviously, so that was a problem, too. World War II interfered with that, and everything started going in the wrong direction after that, and by the time you got to West Side Story in the 1960s, you were back to stereotypes of greasers.
I want to take it back to 1961, in an instance where Hollywood put a spotlight on the Puerto Rican community in New York, but in a way that wasn't entirely accurate, but created a star in Rita Moreno, an iconic actress who a lot of people still look up to for all of her body of work, but this is the one that sort of pushed her over the top.
I like to be in America, okay by me in America, everything free in America.
For a small fee in America.
Buying on credit is so nice.
One look at us and they charge twice.
I have my own washing machine.
What will you have though to keep clean?
Skyscrapers bloom in America. Cadillac zoom in America. Industry boom in America.
12 in a room in America.
Lots of new housing with more space.
Lots of doors slamming in our face.
I'll get a terrace apartment.
Better get rid of your accent.
Life can be bright in America.
If you can fight in America.
Life is all right in America.
If you're all white in America.
We were incredibly honored to have her on our show a while back. After that role, she was only offered roles with accents.
Oh.
And
she didn't for like over a decade.
She didn't work for almost 10 years.
Oh, that's
because of that, because she kept turning it down. So she did win, and she's one of the first actors, actresses, etc., to win a Tony, a Grammy, an Emmy, and an Oscar, but it came at a price.
This is about a failure of imagination. You know, the producers in Hollywood only know how to reproduce something that they've seen before, and they really don't know how to think outside the box. And so the idea, for instance, of casting Michael Peña in a film like, say, The Martian, would not occur to them, and it really ought to. It would be much better if I mean, Hollywood would be a more diverse place if they would simply choose actors who were not mainstream actors for mainstream pictures.
While we're talking about actually winning an Oscar, let's take a look at Latinos and Latinas who have been either nominated or won Oscars in the acting categories, thanks to our dear friend Camille Salas. She's a director of the Alt Latino Research Team here at NPR and also part of the NPR Library. And this is what she found. She found 12 actors had been nominated or have won awards for either lead or supporting acting roles. And there are names that we've mentioned. Anthony Quinn, he won twice. And then also Jose Ferrer, who was had Spanish heritage, I believe it was. Jose Ferrer, Katie Jurado, Rita Moreno. And then more recently, Edward James Olmos, Benicio del Toro, Andy Garcia, Selma Hayek. But interestingly, the first ever Latino nominated for an acting award was a guy named Thomas Gomez. He was nominated in 1948 for a role in a film called Ride the Pink Horse. And Camille's research shows a quote from the New York Times back then where he says he refused to play Latin characters unless they were presented with sympathy or at least humanity.
And that was when?
1948.
Boy, you know, I mean, that's really interesting because one of the articles I used for research here was an article from the New York Times in 1981, and people are saying exactly the same thing after all those years, and now people are saying exactly the same thing now. It's like nothing ever changes. Things are better. There are a lot of actors out there who, you know, who are Latino actors who we're familiar with, and you think, well, it's not as if people can't get roles and can't even get affirmative roles today. It is possible to do. It just doesn't happen as often as you'd want it to. And what it really doesn't happen in is pictures that are likely to get nominated for Oscars. And that's the frustration.
Let's take a look at some iconic roles that I pulled together that do reflect ethnicity and culture in a way that resonates with the people that it's intended for. And I'm going to start with a film from 1983. This is The Ballad of Gregorio Cortez, and it stars Edward James Olmos. It was right after he made Zoot Suit with Luis Valdez. This was a small independent film that he drove around the country himself, delivering to art houses and stuff, and he really believed in it. It's based on a corrido about a misunderstanding between a Mexican rancher and a Texas Ranger in the 1800s that results in the rancher getting shot and this guy having to go on the run. And I play this only because there was a scene where he's on the run and he goes to a restaurant and he sits down and he's trying to hide himself. And this Mexican waitress comes over and says, "You look like the guy they're looking for." He says, "No, I don't know anything about it." And she says, "I'm going to give you some food." She brings over the food, and he gets a tortilla and he gets it and he cuts a little piece off and he scoops it up with his hand. And it's exactly how I was raised. I mean, we eat that way. We eat tortillas in a rural tradition of scooping it up and using a fork and doing all that. And it was the first time I'd ever seen anybody eat like I eat. And this is 1983, so I'm, you know, well into my 20s by then. And that scene really just, like, I started crying like a baby.
you're choking me up
because
now.
Because it was just so important. So I want to play a clip from the movie. This is the part where the misunderstanding happens, and it's all based on language, and it could be happening right now anywhere in the Southwest.
Buenas tardes.
Buenas tardes.
Ask him what his name is.
¿Cómo se llamas?
Romaldo. Ask old Romaldo if he knows that Gregorio Cortez,
el sheriff, quiere hablar con Gregorio Cortez.
Gregorio Cortez a sus órdenes. ¿En qué les puedo ayudar?
Ask him if he's traded him a horse lately.
El sheriff quiere saber si has cambiado un caballo ahora.
No, un caballo no.
El sheriff dice que ya hablamos con el otro, que no hay que mentir.
No estamos mintiendo.
Okay, at this point, language presents a little bit of confusion. Cortez says that he traded a mare or a yegua, and the Texas Ranger accuses him of lying, misunderstanding the difference between caballo and yegua, mill horse and mare.
Well, then you habla him that he's under arrest.
No, no dijo!
I don't know that a lot of people ever really saw the movie. Even here in the United States, I don't know that a lot of people ever saw the movie. But it was something that stuck out to me. As something.
Yeah, I remember when they were distributing that. I was still in the film business back then. I worked as a advertiser for a chain of movie theaters. And I remember he was taking it around, and we did not get it in our theaters. And we kind of regarded that as a good thing because we were afraid it was not going to make any money. And it did pretty okay here in Washington. But there's a large Spanish-speaking audience here in Washington, so yeah. That's why.
Later on, he went on to win an Oscar nomination for his role as Jaime Escalante in the film Stand and Deliver. Now we're going to move on to another clip that I brought in. So many Latin actresses get stereotyped as maids. And a lot of times that those are all the roles that are available. I'm going to play a clip from a movie called El Norte, which came out in the mid-80s. And this scene features the great character actress Lupe Ontiveros. If you saw her face, you would recognize her from a million films, a lot of times as the maid. And in this scene, she plays a maid. But before we play it, I want to point out that this is something that she said about all the maids that she had to play. She said, "I'm proud to present those hands that labor in this country. I've given every maid I've ever portrayed soul and heart." And she went on to establish a nonprofit actors organization and theater in Los Angeles, very active up until her death just a few years ago. This is a clip from the film El Norte.
Now, this is the washing machine, and it's really very simple. First, you flip this to on, and then you have 8 seconds to put your program in, or else it will go to the default setting. Now, I usually leave the water level at extra high reset.
Okay, Mrs. Rogers, you no worry about nothing. We do good job.
I know you will, but please, call me Helen.
Okay.
Now, we'll go into the kitchen, and I will show you the trash compactor and the convection oven, okay?
Nacha, ¿tú entendiste cómo se maneja esto?
Claro, hombre, no tienes un chiste. Mira, lo que importa es que tú peles el diente y digas que sí a todo lo que te digan. Vente.
Even I have trouble keeping up with those instructions.
Part of the beauty of the scene is the ridiculousness of the woman of the house trying to explain this complex machine to a woman from Guatemala who is one of the co-stars of the movie who had just come over and has not even a thin grasp on English.
Yeah, and she's been washing her clothing in a river her whole life.
It's a powerful movie about the immigrant experience, and it's one of those films that's so powerful, I can't watch it again because it was just devastated me, the whole experience. And the beauty of the film, again, Gregory Nava, a Chicano filmmaker from California.
I'd like to make an appeal in a special way to the men in the army.
This is a scene from the film Romero, made in 1989, based on the very real Archbishop of El Salvador, Oscar Romero. He is portrayed by Raul Julia, a Puerto Rican actor known for his work on the stage and the screen, an award winner who we lost way too soon to illness in 1994. In this scene, he is delivering an actual sermon that the real Bishop Romero gave, talking directly to the soldiers of the Salvadoran army, an army that was responsible for unspeakable acts of violence against Salvadoran civilians during that country's civil war. Bishop Romero was murdered in his church shortly after delivering this sermon. Now, I play this clip as another example of what I consider an important role delivered by an iconic Latino actor, this time reflecting a situation in Latin America that has had devastating impact on Salvadorans who now live in the U.S. Here is the rest of the sermon from the film Romero.
Brothers, each one of you is one of us. We are the same people. The farmers and peasants that you kill are your own brothers and sisters. When you hear the words of a man telling you to kill, think instead in the words of God, "Thou shalt not kill." No soldier is obliged to obey an order contrary to the law of God. In his name, and in the name of our tormented people who have suffered so much and whose laments cry out to heaven, I implore you, I beg you, I order you, stop the repression!
Bob, I'm always so fascinated by the way American films portray Latin America. And it's even like another level of fascination when it's like a Latino born in the U.S. directing that movie. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking about this movie that came out recently, just a really bad comedy. It's like Jennifer Aniston goes on a road trip to Mexico.
Oh, We're the Millers?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, dear. Well, I'm not going to defend Hollywood on this. Please.
No, but check this out. So she goes on this road trip to Mexico, and, you know, it's the way Hollywood portrays Mexico. You know, like, dingy border town with, like, you get thrown into jail and, you know, horrible things happen to the poor Americans and corruption, prostitution, narcos. And I remember I watched that movie in Mexico.
Mm.
In Mexico City with Mexican friends and other Latin American friends.
I'm fascinated. And what was the reaction?
The reaction was, this is absolutely and utterly disgusting.
Huh.
Like, these Americans, they think this of us and they make a movie about it and they think it's funny. Like, mm-hmm. here we are. First of all, here we are in a very cosmopolitan city and there's this film about how they get lost in Mexico and there's chickens running around everywhere, which in some parts of Mexico might be true and there's nothing mm-hmm. wrong with that. But also, here we are, you know, in the midst of a drug war that's taken, what, 40,000 lives? And you think it's funny because El Pobre Gringo got lost in Mexico. And you're using this for, like, slapstick.
Yeah.
And it was so tense in that room where we were watching it.
I'll bet.
And I just remember thinking, like, this is grotesque.
Well, my guess is that the guys who greenlighted the picture in Hollywood probably were not thinking about the Mexican audience when they were making the movie. It is a frustration to me that, you know, in fairness, comedy uses stereotypes
sure.
and uses them
sure.
in terribly negative ways for the most part. And it's a frustration to watch that kind of movie anyway.
And it's also just not funny. You know
yeah.
what I mean?
Yeah. This is the problem with stereotypes and the problem with once something gets into the public's head. You know, the reason stereotypes were so useful to Hollywood initially is that in silent films, they allowed you to telegraph everything so that if someone came on in a certain kind of costume and behaved in a certain kind of way, that person was instantly identifiable as being from a certain place and all those kinds of things. It was just shorthand. Later, when people started talking, it would be nice if everything had gotten more sophisticated, but it didn't for the most part, and it's still easy for screenwriters to write characters who fit all the stereotypes that audiences have, so they don't have to do the work of actually writing an intelligent character.
Okay, but so let me ask you this. So what you're saying, right, they're not thinking what are the mm-hmm. Mexican audience is going to think about this. But, you know, we're living in this era of globalization. You know, mm-hmm. you can – a lot of these films are going to be watched abroad.
Right.
It's no longer a national market. I mean, a lot of them are going to be bought off the – pirate market and then a subway station.
Well, Hollywood doesn't care as much about those.
Well, but don't they care about that?
Well, here's the deal. Last year, one of the biggest pictures of the year was Fast and Furious 7.
Yes.
Right? And it has a very diverse cast.
Oh, and the Romeo Santos cameo.
Exactly.
Which, what, for like 2 seconds?
Well, but that was the very diversity of that cast is why that picture made over $1 billion worldwide. And that does not go unnoticed. You know, when if you look at the biggest pictures of last year, that and Star Wars, The Force Awakens, they are filled with diversity. And that diversity is playing extremely well around the world. And eventually Hollywood is going to get that, right?
Right.
It's just that they haven't got it yet. And as a practical matter, with the American public, the U.S. public, becoming more and more Hispanic and more diverse, they're going to have to get it for the United States consumption
swim.
Too. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, it's automatic. What has happened already because it has to happen faster is the television is doing this. Television has become much more diverse. And the rationale for that is simply that they don't want to leave any audience members out there not coming to them at a time when they're market is getting so splintered. And, you know, with a zillion cable channels that you can go to, it's easy to find your demographic group if you want to. And so all of network television is getting much more diverse. I think when film gets into the same bind, it's going to do the same thing. And that's coming.
That is a great way to bring all of this back to closure, a great summation, because it is about, because we started the conversation pointing out the protest about the lack of diversity in the nominations, and it gets into the nuts and bolts of Hollywood. It is the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences that make the nominations, and that is a close group. And the struggle there is to make it a more diverse group. And then it sprinkles down to the people that are pitching the ideas, the Jennifer Aniston idea versus the Fast and Furious idea. It's all part of the same thing. And I think that it's always helpful to have these conversations. But also, again, what we try to do today is look back on the successes and all the things that did resonate with people.
Do you remember something that we did on the air about 2 years ago, I think, a piece that Code Switch did about the statuette itself, the Oscar statue? There is some talk that maybe the statue should not be called Oscar. He should be called Emilio.
Okay, 2 years ago, our friends at NPR's Code Switch heard about this rumor and put Shireen Marisol Meraji on the case. Here is part of her story about whether or not Emilio El Indio Fernandez was the original model for the Oscar statuette.
And the story about him modeling for the Oscar statue, you'll find it on Wikipedia, hear it on public radio.
Those pecs, those thighs, those shoulders, they came from a real guy.
You can read it in legit books.
I first saw it in a history book by a Mexican film historian named Emilio Garcia Riera.
That's Charles Ramirez Berg, professor of film studies at the University of Texas at Austin. He says there was a community of Mexicans working in Hollywood in the 1920s, around the same time the Academy Awards began.
And there was a number of them. Dolores del Rio was there, her cousin Ramon Navarro, and they were both big stars. And among them was Emilio Fernandez.
Fernandez was an extra at the time. And Ramirez Berg says when MGM art director Cedric Gibbons was designing the statuette for the Academy Awards, his wife, Dolores del Rio, had an idea.
And the story is that Dolores del Rio referred him to Emilio Fernandez and said, oh, you should use Emilio for the model. He had this very athletic build. I mean, he looked just like Oscar. All of this could have happened.
I called up the Academy Awards Library here in L.A. They wouldn't give me an interview, but the librarian I spoke with said there's zero proof any of that happened. And she seemed pretty annoyed by the question. They've been getting it a lot lately.
Okay, I don't know about you guys, but I'm going to go with a myth.
In other words, there are going to be a lot of Latinos up there on stage, whether or not there are live Latinos up there on stage.
I was going to suggest we stop referring to it as Oscar and call him Oscar.
Yeah. Or it would be kind of cool to win an Emilio.
Bob Mondello, NPR movie critic, always a pleasure to have you here with us here in Alt Latino. Thank you for coming in.
This was a joy.
I learned so much.
We hope that the listeners did too. If you did, write us, let us know on our website at npr.org/altlatino and on Facebook and Twitter.
We are NPR's Alt Latino. I'm Jasmine Garz.
And I'm Felix Contreras. This has been Alt Latino. And this ominous-sounding music is from the soundtrack to the film The Revenant. It's the only film in the major acting and directing Oscar categories that includes a person of color in the nominations. It received an astounding 12 nominations, including directing for Alejandro Iñárritu, who is from Mexico. See you next week.